Welcome to Dishing Heat with Wolfie and Big Shot Song. I'm your host, Nathan Wolf.
And I'm your co-host, Max Song.
It is currently October 23rd at 6:30 Mountain Time, and we are here for the first episode of our podcast. So, our first point, the Nets last night defeated the Sixers 114-109. And what did you think about that game?
Well, I had a couple of key points on the Nets side and the Sixers side. First, I think that KD is the best player in the world. I might be a tad biased because I'm a huge Nets fan. But I think KD can really do everything when he chooses to. Like, a lot of people say he's just a pure scorer, but he got 29, 15, and 12. He got a triple-double. When he puts his mind to it, he really can play make because he's tall and he can see over people. So I think KD's the best player in the world, and he really put us on his back. Obviously, like Aldridge, right?
Yeah, that was a huge game by KD. I mean, James Harden played nicely, but KD had 12 assists, led the team. With no Irving, they're going to definitely need that from him. So that was huge. And man, Aldridge is just unfair on that team. It's just, I can't believe they got him, honestly.
Yeah, when I was watching the game, like, a lot of people see his 23 points off the bench, right? But down the stretch, he made bigger plays than just scoring, right? He just hit the ball outside when he got an offensive rebound, and it gave us a lot of extra possessions, which helped us close the game.
Yeah, he played awesome. The Sixers led almost the whole way in that game until right around the end. They kind of blew it. Like, that was a crazy ending.
Yeah, it was absolutely ridiculous. I was freaking out when Doc Rivers decided not to challenge two plays that I think was challengeable. But I think it really helped the Nets win. And Danny Green airballed threes in a row, so I guess that helped the Nets win.
And then for the Sixers side, Seth Curry and Tobias Harris both playing well, as they did last year to start the season, each dropping a beautiful 23 points on, we're looking at combined 19 of their 32 shots, and they knocked down 7 of their 8 threes. What do you think about that duo?
Yeah, Seth is ridiculous. Like, every time I see him pump fake and pull up an open jumper, I think it's going on. I throw up my hands. It basically always goes in. And I'm like, I think Toby's really underrated. Like, he's really well built, and his mid-range is severely underrated. He cooled off in the second half, but he still gave the Sixers a lead in the first half.
Yeah, that duo, Tobias Harris's contract looked really bad until last season started, and then it looked really, really good. The guy was this close to 50-40-90 on, like, sure, it's only 20 points per game, you could argue, but man had 7 boards, just shy of 4 assists. Like, the guy is just, he is really good at basketball. And yeah, I agree, Seth Curry, unfortunately, after he got COVID last year, he cooled off a bit, but man, for you to shoot 47-45 on 5 threes a game, like, that's pretty amazing. Again, another guy who was pretty close to 50-40-90 last year as well.
Yeah, they're just ridiculously efficient. And, like, on Toby, he's also a really good defensive player if you watch him play against specific players. Like, he was guarding KD on several occasions. He caused KD to dribble off his foot off of bounds, giving Sixers extra possession. So, yeah, he's also much improved on defense.
Yeah, for sure. So when we look at these two teams now, no Ben Simmons, no Kyrie, which we will get to, but which team do you think will have the better regular season this year?
For me, I think it's a no-brainer. Nets. I choose the easy path. Nets have two superstars, obviously Kevin Durant and James Harden. They're figuring out chemistry right now because we got a lot of new players like Patty Mills, and we're figuring out the chemistry, but our depth is insane with Paul Millsap and people like Blake Griffin, so I think Nets will be better. Also, with the Sixers, without Ben Simmons, I think their defensive identity is also questionable, and there's just a lot of drama, so there's a lot of baggage on them, so I don't think they'll be as well this year.
That's fair. I'm just looking at the Sixers as a regular season team with, I'm sure Harden and KD will both have games where they don't play, and if there's no Kyrie there, I mean, the Sixers were the number one team in the East last year, and I could easily see them doing it again. Yes, there's no Ben Simmons, but, I mean, when you slot Seth Curry and Tobias Harris back into their roles from last year, if they play as well as they did, I mean, you added some pieces, not a lot, but Drummond can get to you some rebounds. That's a whole nother discussion about whether Andre Drummond is a plus or a minus on that team. But, I mean, they were this close to beating the Nets, and Joel Embiid did not play a very good game. So I'm going to take the Sixers. I think they have the upper hand in the regular season. Not talking about playoffs, but I could definitely see them finishing at the top of the standings in the regular season for sure. But let's move on to our next topic. Looking at that game, the big storyline around it, which was very fitting, Kyrie Irving and Ben Simmons situations. So what are your thoughts on those situations right now?
Well, I think with Kyrie, I'm a lot more optimistic than most people. I think he'll get vaccinated eventually and he'll play for the Brooklyn Nets this year. So I don't think that Brooklyn Nets should trade him because he was ridiculous last year, 27-6-5 and 50-40-90, which isn't talked about enough. So I think Kyrie will come back eventually, maybe halfway through the season at latest. So yeah, I don't think Kyrie should be moved. For Ben Simmons, well, I just don't think he should be playing with the Sixers. I think he needs a change of scenery. And I don't think he wants to play for Philadelphia, ex especially with that crowd like hating him the entire time. So I think Ben Simmons should be moved.
That's a fair point. I think when you look at the Kyrie Irving situation, you really have to look back to what happened last season when he did sit out those games for personal reasons. He came back, and he came back pretty quickly. I believe he only missed about 7 games. And for a guy who we didn't know what he was going to do, he did not. He really didn't sit out that long. And I could totally see him getting vaccinated. It just makes sense. I mean, he is holding out, and he is a guy who sticks to his philosophies and his morals. So who really knows what he's thinking about, but I agree with you there. And the Ben Simmons situation, it's turned into a mental health thing. I mean, is that what it is truly? If it is, then that's a whole different story. But that whole situation is absolutely shocking. But is there any possibility in your mind of a Kyrie for Ben Simmons trade?
No, I don't think it will happen whatsoever. On the Sixers side of things, I don't think Daryl Morey will do it. He hasn't even contacted the Nets, even though a lot of other teams have. I think Daryl Morey is acting more towards Dame. He's trying to wait out for Dame or Bradley Beal. I don't think he wants Kyrie. And I think on the Nets side of things, I don't think Kevin Durant and James Harden really want to trade Kyrie, especially Kevin Durant, who is a close friend of Kyrie. And I think both teams disagree on the value of each player. Like, I don't think the Sixers want Kyrie in return for Ben Simmons without maybe a draft swap or a draft pick. And on the Nets side of things, I definitely don't think they should trade Kyrie, who averaged, like I said, 27 points on 50-40-90 for a guy who won't even shoot the basketball. So I don't think either side will agree on anything, even if they do want to trade for each player.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see the fit of Ben Simmons in Brooklyn, and I really don't see why you would ever trade Kyrie Irving. It doesn't make sense. I don't think he's going to play. I don't see why you would trade for Kyrie. The Nets still have not they are not shopping Kyrie Irving, but they're reportedly taking calls, as all GMs should. You should always take calls for your players. You shouldn't and no, taking calls and shopping are I believe two entirely different things. But that's where they stand right now. Kyrie Irving, I agree. The Kyrie season last year was just absolutely amazing, and to trade him for Ben Simmons, it doesn't seem logical. Even if you got extra value, like what does that look like? Especially in terms of a salary cap situation, it's only picks. Do you really care about picks? Just so you can like you would want to trade for more players, but you don't have the money to. It doesn't seem logical in that situation. But in lieu of that, then could you see any possible Kyrie Irving trades outside of the Sixers, and if so, what are those?
I see two main ones that the Nets maybe would do. One is involving the Pacers, so I think Pacers are trying to trade with a lot of people right now. Kyrie for Brogdon and Turner. So I think Brogdon would maybe like fill the gap of Kyrie in the fact that he scores also really efficiently. Like he almost had 50-40-90. He has had 50-40-90. And Turner, like I think the Nets would love to have him. He can stretch the floor. He went 5 of 9 from 3 yesterday night. And he blocks shots, he protects the rim, and he's a big that the Nets really need. So I think Kyrie for Brogdon and Turner is really good. And I think on the Pacers side of things, they'd love to trade Turner away because Turner and Sabonis don't really work together. And I think Sabonis is slightly a better player than Turner, even though Turner seems to have a better plus minus than Sabonis. So I think just to have a change of scenery in Indiana, they would trade for Kyrie.
That's fair for sure. We will get to the Pacers later because the Pacers situation is really interesting right now. I mean, it worked last night in terms of putting Turner with Sabonis. Will it work in the future? Did it work last year? That's to be seen. That is definitely an interesting situation. I think in both Kyrie and Simmons' situations, Pacers trades could easily come up. Pacers are just a team that the identity of them is very tough to figure out right now. What their future looks like is really hard to figure out. We will get to that, but do you have any other Kyrie trades, or do you have any Ben Simmons trades that you would like to look at? Because I think that actually Ben Simmons being moved is much more probable, in my opinion.
Yeah, for Kyrie, I see one more involving the Timberwolves, which actually involves D'Lo going home, going back to the Nets. I see like Beasley, D'Lo, and maybe a salary filler or maybe a pick in return for Kyrie. I think the Nets would love to have D'Lo back in Brooklyn, and I think Timberwolves would probably also love to have Kyrie in Minnesota. The problem with that is that D'Lo is incredibly close friends with Karl-Anthony Towns, but I think it would work for both teams because D'Lo will fill the spot of Kyrie, and Kyrie would fill the spot of D'Lo, and yeah, I think that that would work for both teams.
Kyrie for D'Lo, man. I don't see that. I'm not gonna lie. I don't see that trade. I don't know if I don't think from a salary cap standpoint that is necessarily doable. But even if it was, unless Kyrie Irving will not get vaccinated, I don't see any universe really where that makes a ton of sense. D'Lo just he's just not nearly at Kyrie Irving's level. He's not a great defender. He's a 20 points a guy, but he's only a 20 points per game guy. Sure, he was nice for Brooklyn. I'm not gonna disagree with you there, but that one is I don't like that one as much as the other trade. I'm not gonna lie. I just like listen, D'Lo wasn't bad, but he's not the most efficient guy, and he's not the best pass. He's a fine passer, although it doesn't necessarily matter when he goes to Brooklyn. But I definitely like the other trade better. But so what could Ben Simmons trades look like then?
I think Ben Simmons can go to like a lot of spots. So obviously the Sixers want to move him to a place like the Blazers in exchange for Dame. But I think if they can't get Dame, even CJ and like Robert Covington and a couple picks would be a good return for the Sixers, especially if Ben Simmons just straight up doesn't want to play for the Sixers. And I think CJ is incredibly underrated. He's efficient, he can play make, and he's a really good shooting guard. And Robert Covington would help recover some of the defense lost if you traded Ben Simmons. So I think Blazers would be an interesting spot for Ben Simmons.
I actually do like that trade. That trade makes a lot of sense to me. I think anytime you're trading for a guard, you can definitely look at that trade for sure, without a doubt. When you look at the Philadelphia 76ers roster, in terms of trading for a shooting guard, definitely less advantageous. You would rather have the point guard, but I mean, you can definitely work with that. I think CJ McCollum definitely makes sense. Do you have any other looks at a Ben Simmons trade?
I saw two main more ones. So I don't think Pacers is gonna happen because it's already been offered and Daryl Morey won't move it. So I'm just not gonna talk about the Pacers. I will talk about the Cavaliers, however. Like obviously Ben Simmons doesn't want to move there. He said that before, but at this point Sixers don't really care what Ben Simmons wants. And the pick would like the trade would involve Ben Simmons for Colin Sexton and other people and other picks as well. And I think this is good for the Cavaliers because, well, they want a good young player like Ben Simmons and they don't want to pay Colin Sexton. And I think Colin Sexton is a good gamble for the Sixers. He's a good scorer. He can defend. He can play make. And he has a lot of upside. And if you get other up supplementation from the Cavaliers, I think it would also work for the Sixers.
That's definitely an interesting trade. It reminds me a lot, as you said, of the Jimmy Butler trade in terms of trading for a guy in the final year of his contract when you don't really have the full ability to re-sign him. You're definitely going in a way a little bit all in, especially when you're trading a guy like Ben Simmons who does he doesn't have as much value as the Sixers are trying to show that he has, but he still has a lot of value. So there's definitely upside to that trade for sure, and you are getting a point guard. How much of a point guard Colin Sexton is another debate, but that one's a tougher trade to make, I think, if you're the Sixers.
Yeah, I agree. The last
Yeah.
trade I found was also the Timberwolves. It also involves D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley. I think that Ben Simmons is really close to Karl-Anthony Towns, and I think it would be good for Minnesota to have a defensive identity with Ben Simmons. And I think he's a good young player, even though a lot of people hate Ben Simmons. I think he would fit with Karl-Anthony Towns. He spaces the floor. He's like probably the greatest shooting center that we've ever seen. So I think if anyone could make it work with Simmons as a center, Karl-Anthony Towns could. And I think that in return, that D'Angelo Russell would be a much better fit with Embiid because he can actually shoot and he's willing to shoot the ball. He's not the best playmaker, but he can still play make. And getting Malik Beasley, who's a good scorer who isn't talked about enough, would also be good. He'd be a good guy to come off the bench for the Sixers to provide some extra firepower.
I really do like this trade. This trade makes a lot of sense in terms of getting D'Angelo Russell. This is a team where getting D'Lo makes a lot more sense, in my opinion, because yes, D'Angelo Russell is going to space the floor. Like said previously, he's not the best playmaker, but it doesn't necessarily matter. He is a point guard. This, to me, makes more sense than Colin Sexton, for sure. I definitely do like this trade more. One other spot that was not mentioned, going to Sacramento for Buddy Hield, also makes sense to me in terms of from a Sixers standpoint, but you can argue whether that makes sense in terms of a Sacramento standpoint, and that's a whole other thing than the Sixers, but in terms of just trading away Ben Simmons, I think that makes a lot of sense for the Sixers.
I think from the Kings' standpoint, they'll really take anyone they have, right? Like, I think their point guard is going to be De'Aaron Fox, and he's a really good point guard. He's really underrated. But I think Ben Simmons would fit with him as, like, a power forward, maybe. And I think the Kings maybe just want to switch it up because they've had the same roster with the same young players for a long time, and they haven't really done anything with it. So I think that's a good trade for the Kings. On the Sixers side of things, I don't really see it happening. I think Buddy Hield would be a really good fit with Embiid. He'd space the floor, and Buddy Hield is efficient from three and isn't talked about enough either. But I don't think Daryl Morey does it. Daryl Morey wants to aim for the better players, the more like famous name players like Damian Lillard. So I don't think Daryl Morey will do that.
That's fair for sure. The big question, though, as much as everyone in NBA circles likes to talk about Kyrie and Ben Simmons trades, what do you think the chance of both of them being traded is?
I think Kyrie has a 20% chance to get traded. KD has to okay everything because obviously he's the Nets franchise player and he's Kyrie's best friend, so he won't okay him getting traded unless it gets really bad that Kyrie just doesn't do anything. And Simmons, I think it's incredibly likely that he'll get traded. I think he'll take a long time, as previously hinted at by Daryl Morey, saying that it could take an entire 4 years. So I think Simmons will get moved, but it might be much later than people actually think.
Yeah, in terms of this season, I would say a Kyrie Irving trade is in the single digits in terms of percentage, and I would say a Ben Simmons trade is probably at or upwards of 50%. It's been talked about forever, but this time, I think it's legit. I still think they should have traded him prior to the last season when everyone was debating Embiid, Simmons, which do you trade? You trade Simmons. I've always believed you trade Simmons, and I think now is... his value's down a little bit, but it's still there. So I think there's definitely a high possibility of the Simmons trade. Switching topics completely, though, let's look at the Wizards beating the Pacers 135-134 in that overtime thriller. What do you think about that game?
That was an amazing game. It went back and forth. They took different leads at all times. They tied the game, and I think everyone played really well. Obviously, Spencer Dinwiddie and Miles Turner. Like, I've watched Spencer Dinwiddie in Brooklyn, and I really loved him in Brooklyn. And I didn't expect him to actually go to the Wizards, but he seeming to fit really well, and he played a great second game with the Wizards. So yeah, Spencer Dinwiddie really impressed me.
In terms of that then, who do you think played a better game last night, Spencer Dinwiddie or Miles Turner?
I got to give it to Dinwiddie. In 35 minutes, he had like 34 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds. He shot 13 of 24 from the field, 6 of 9 from 3. And he just made big plays like everywhere through the game. At a certain point where the Wizards went up and Indiana made a run to tie it 60-60, he just goes straight to the rim and makes a layup and demoralizes the Pacers. So I think he makes big plays. And obviously down the stretch, he aces the game with that big shot that wins them the game. And yeah, I think Dinwiddie just made bigger plays. Turner also had an excellent game. He had 40 points, 10 rebounds, one steal, 3 blocks in 44 minutes, which is a lot more minutes than Dinwiddie. And for a center, he's insanely efficient from three that game. He shot 5 for 9, and he shot 15 from 22 of the field. And he played really good defense. He obviously played better the defense than Spencer Dinwiddie. But I think just because Dinwiddie had bigger moments, he like hit the big shot and he really started the momentum for the Wizards, I think that's why Dinwiddie played a better game.
I agree in terms of Dinwiddie having an amazing game. I think that down the stretch he was fantastic. But I'm going to give the nod to Miles Turner because that was such an uber efficient performance for a guy who took 9 of his 22 shots as threes as a center. That is beyond huge. If he's going to work together with Sabonis, I mean, this is the vision right there. Sabonis knocked down 2 of his 4 threes while Turner knocked down 5 of his 9. This is an absolutely fantastic game from that front court. And I think that's what we're looking for from the Pacers in terms of Miles Turner and DeMontis Sabonis. And this hugely ups Turner's trade value if they're going to ever look to move him. But the real issue is what is Indiana's play right now? They did lose that game. And let's not forget that's a Washington squad that was missing Bradley Beal. What are your thoughts on Indiana's path moving forward? Where are they as a team right now?
Yeah, I think Indiana is one of the most confusing teams in the entire league. Like, they always try to stay kind of relevant. They're hovering around the playoffs every year. And they're a good team. They have good players. Malcolm Brogdon, obviously Sabonis, Turner. And yeah, they have a lot of good players like Aaron Holiday. So they're just a really good, they're a good team. They're a solid team. And they made a good coaching hire this year. Obviously much better than last year's. But I think they need to make changes. Being in the middle of the pack in the NBA is, I think, the worst thing that you can do because you don't get draft picks for the future and you don't win anything. It's just semi-exciting for Indiana. So I think what the next move should be is to move Turner, in my opinion. I think that even though Turner seems to fit better with the team a little bit, if you look at plus minuses of both Sabonis and Turner, I think that if you trade a Turner for a player that fits very well with Sabonis, that the Pacers would be much better. And I think I'm a lot higher than on Sabonis than a lot of other people. Sabonis can play make, he can shoot, he is great in the post, and I think Sabonis is just a really good player. So I think the Indiana Pacers need to make some trades to either get them more relevant by trading Turner and maybe Brogdon, or they need to prepare for the future. They shouldn't stay in the middle of pack.
Yeah, the Pacers situation is a little head scratching. They made the playoffs 9 of 10 seasons between 2010-11 to the 1920 season, but they did miss the playoffs last season. Only two out of their last 11 seasons had they missed the playoffs. That's huge. But they haven't made it to the NBA Finals in that stretch. And quite honestly, I don't really know where they're at now. Myles Turner and Sabonis are both 25. That's something to think about. Brogdon, on the other hand, is at 29 this year, which is definitely older than the two. Obviously, if you can do basic math, you can see this. But I don't know where they go. They were so mediocre last season, and I don't understand what the future looks for them. But I also just I'm I don't see them blowing it up. Whether it's the right move or not is beyond the point to them. I don't see them blowing it up, at least this season. I don't even know if I see it next season. I think they're going to definitely try and ride it out with this current team. Although I could see us a bonus trade, but I think they would try to receive value in other ways, at least, and try to stay competitive. I don't see them blowing up anything more than maybe a Miles Turner trade.
Yeah, I don't know. Indiana's just stuck in purgatory. They really don't do anything. They're the pretty boring team in the NBA.
Speaking of teams that aren't boring, the Lakers and the Suns. The Lakers dropped their second straight game to open the season, 115-105 to the Suns. And what do you think this says about the Lakers and or the Phoenix Suns?
Yeah, that game was so messy. Like Rondo pointing the finger gun at a fan. Dwight and AD getting into it, so it was just like one of the most dramatic games I've ever seen. It was ridiculous. On the Lakers side of things, I'm not really high on the Lakers, and I've never really been high on the Lakers, especially with the Russell Westbrook trade. I think they will need a lot more time to mesh than most people think. Probably the entire regular season they'll be conflicting. LeBron and Westbrook aren't a good fit. AD still needs to get like ready to actually dominate because a lot of the time he's passive. And I think they don't have as good as of a defensive identity as they did in the championship season. So I don't understand why they're starting people like DeAndre Jordan and like Kent Bazemore, who can't really defend. And I think the Lakers just aren't as good as many people think. Like LeBron and AD are playing well this year. LeBron is averaging almost 30 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.5 steals. He's shooting like 51% from the field and 50% from three. Obviously, he's not going to stay that efficient from three, but LeBron's playing like he's young and healthy. And Anthony Davis, he's averaging almost 28 points, almost 13 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 1 steal, 2 blocks. So Anthony Davis is a really bright spot in terms of playing defense. His defense is superb. So those two are playing well, but Russell Westbrook's not, and Frank Vogel's lineups also need work. So I think the Lakers won't be that good during the regular season. They'll be one of the lower seeds, but they'll still make the playoffs, of course.
Yeah, there's this team. This game was very interesting. On the Suns' standpoint, the Suns just they looked good. Chris Paul looked good. Devin Booker looked good. Their new signing, Mikal Bridges. We'll get to the feasibility of that team in terms of going forward. But he looks really good, and that's a huge win for the Suns. Obviously, people love to react early season, and getting a big win like that really helps helps boost your team's confidence. In terms of the Lakers just, I mean, there was all the jokes that it's a retirement home there, but really, when you look at their lineup actually hit the floor, Kent Bazemore played 23 minutes, like, Avery Bradley played 21 minutes and didn't record a stat. One of only 11 players to do that. That's just, it's a little head scratching. But I don't know, the whole situation, especially just at that guard position, is just confusing. Especially with Russell Westbrook and Rondo both playing big minutes. It's not necessarily in this game. Rondo only played 14, but he played a lot more minutes in their opener, which they also dropped. But looking, let's start on the Phoenix side. So what do the Phoenix Suns do about DeAndre Ayton?
I think they're going to pay him next season. They're going to match whatever other teams offer him, because they should not let him go, in my opinion. He's a good young center, and he's still improving. He has huge upside. His defense is much improved from his rookie season. And I think the problem is they have a cheap owner. Like, he didn't pay for Joe Johnson when Steve Nash was there, and a lot of people still don't forgive him for that. So I think he's just waiting until next season. I'm assuming he'll match it. Like, Jaren Jackson Jr. got paid $105 million. Mikal got $90 million. So I think he's worth something like $120 million over 4 years. And I think Phoenix has to pay him.
I'm so happy you brought up Joe Johnson. That signing has forever annoyed me. Ever since I figured out that they were just too cheap to pay him. Joe Johnson is one of my favorite players of all time. And it's just, he should have a ring. I believe he has. No, he doesn't have a ring. And Steve Nash should have a ring. And neither of them do. And it's beyond infuriating. But I don't see them. It's not that I necessarily don't see them paying for Ayton. I could see it maybe, but I don't even know if it's feasible for them to pay Ayton after re-signing Mikal Bridges to that much money. That situation, I think it's really just going to depend on how this season goes. If they get very, very close, I feel like you almost have to try to bring back Ayton or sign and trade him for some sort of value. You cannot let him go. And I think Ayton wants to be there. So that's a situation to look at. But, I mean, JaVale McGee's not bad, but you'd definitely rather have Ayton playing those center minutes. And yeah, his value, in terms of his value, I do agree. I think his value might even be more than what you said. I believe you said, did you say 120 over 4 years?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm looking at the way contracts are going. I mean, to be fair, he only had 15 points per game last season. It definitely depends on how well he plays this year. But yeah, there is, for a former number one overall pick, if you don't sign him, there's going to be teams willing to put up bag for DeAndre Ayton for sure. Looking at the other side of this, well, we look at the Lakers. The big question coming to the season and still now is, does Russell Westbrook fit on the Lakers, and does it matter?
Russell Westbrook doesn't fit on the Lakers. I think it's an absolutely horrible fit. When you have LeBron James on your team, you want LeBron to have the ball in his hands, and Russell Westbrook detracts from that. So if you've watched the first game that the Lakers played this season, like, LeBron had the ball, he dominated the game, Russell Westbrook was basically standing in the corner not doing anything, and he just had more turnovers than ever. So I don't think Russell Westbrook's a good fit in the Lakers, and generally I'm lower on Russell Westbrook than a lot of other people. I don't think he meshes well with other superstars. He's a good solo act, but I don't think he's that much of a winning player. And, like, obviously it matters. They have to fit to, like, fix Russ's ego, in a sense, to actually fit with the Lakers, because Russ still thinks he's the MVP. Russ still thinks he's at that level, and he plays like it. So he plays erratically. He turns the ball over. He thinks, like, he has the right to do everything, pull up jumpers when he shouldn't do it. So I think Russell Westbrook right now is detracting from the Lakers' success. I don't know how he'll fit later on. They might figure it out, because LeBron is such a good teammate and is really good at figuring chemistry out. But for now, I don't think Russell Westbrook fits on the Lakers, and it's detracting from their winning.
I mean, obviously, I'm not a big Russell Westbrook fan, and I feel like they will make it work. I don't see a LeBron-led team not figuring out how to integrate a star. It hasn't happened to this point, and I don't see it happening. Maybe this season, maybe it just doesn't work out. But I don't see going forward it just not working. I do think he will eventually fit. Is it a fit, like, from a paper standpoint or right now? No. Could it be a fit, though? I think potentially. Westbrook, I mean, listen, he had 11 boards and 9 assists, but he also shot 6 of 15, only scoring 15 points. And the number one thing is he missed all three of his triples. That's huge. The guy's also the least efficient mid-range shooter for a guy who took the most mid-range shots in the league last year. It's just such a head-scratcher. Another thing, just looking at the Lakers situation to point out, Kemba Bazemore, negative 17, and Avery Bradley, who didn't record his stat, negative 25, whereas Russell Westbrook was plus 4. Something interesting to think about. But let's switch topics, and we're looking at the best fantasy basketball players early in this season. So who currently is your favorite fantasy basketball player?
LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball is absolutely amazing. Like, I didn't think he was going to be this good this fast. His court vision is absolutely ridiculous. He's a much better shooter with that like chest pass form than I would have thought. So he's a really good player. He gets rebounds. He's a tall point guard. So my favorite player in fantasy right now is LaMelo Ball.
Yeah, LaMelo Ball, of course, on my team is absolutely fantastic, dropping 45 and 35 fantasy points in our league, respectively. Obviously, leagues are different scoring systems. Whether you're on Yahoo, this is going with Yahoo stats with a slight variation, but that's the 1 per point, 1.2 for boards, and 1.5 for assists. I definitely agree LaMelo was awesome. I was very excited to pick him up, but my player is going to be Evan Mobley. I grabbed him 85th overall. I believe his value was somewhere in the middle to later end of the draft, excuse me. And to this point, he has dropped 36 fantasy points, 22 fantasy points, and 39 fantasy points tonight against Atlanta in their win, which was a really nice win for them. But he's just been huge. And for a guy that was taken so late, if you're looking at draft, definitely look at grabbing Evan Mobley, especially if you're in a keeper league. Evan Mobley is looking like a guy you want to have for the future. He has only drained one triple, but he has drained a triple for which is nice. And although the points has not necessarily been outstanding, he's been in double digits points every time. And obviously the fantasy points have been very nice coming off of his 7 blocks so far this season too. If you value blocks in your league, that is huge. But the other thing we're going to look at today is who is the player that fantasy managers should be on the lookout for free agents on the waiver wire.
For me, it's a player on my Nets, and that's Patty Mills. I've loved Patty Mills for a really long time, even on the Spurs. He's just a really great player. He constantly is moving, looking for an open shot, and he drains threes. And Patty Mills on the Nets, he's 10 for 10 from three. It's ridiculous. He hasn't missed yet in his first two games, and he's absolutely ridiculous when it comes to making layups. He's incredibly fast. He runs around and meshes really well with James Harden, and like I said, he hasn't missed from three yet, so that's ridiculous. And obviously with Kyrie out for the foreseeable future, Patty will have to play more minutes and fill his role almost. So I think Patty Mills would be a great pickup.
Yeah, if you need a point guard, Patty Mills is looking really nice. Dropping in our league 32 and 20 respectively in both weeks. Patty Mills is a guy who he does have a lower floor, but there's that ceiling opportunity. And I feel like he overall will like balance out to be a pretty consistent scorer. Although night by night, we'll have to see. I'm going with a different point guard though. On the Cleveland Cavaliers, they picked him up this year. I'm going with Ricky Rubio. He's currently rostered in just 49% of Yahoo fantasy leagues. And for a guy who is currently dropped in his three games, 26 points, 21 fantasy points, and 34 fantasy points tonight. With his 23 points, he drained three triples. He also had 8 assists. He also had 10 assists in each of his first two games and scored double digit points. On that team, Ricky Rubio is the passer. And if you need to listen, you can pick up, I found that you can pick up centers. You can pick up big guys, but the two guys we picked here today, both being point guards, that's huge, especially if your league is 1.5 points for assists. You're going to love Ricky Rubio. He's going to be really nice for you in terms of that. These two are both guys that have been doing this. They're both veterans. So, you know, there's definitely consistency, and there's things that are really nice about these two players in the past and going forward that you should be excited about for these two guys. For our last topic for today, we're going to look at, we've each made a 3-team parlay, and we're going to see who can hit by the time our next podcast comes around, and we'll see on this season who can do better. So first of all, who do you have on your parlay and why?
All right, first I picked Bulls to cover a spread of -8 over the Pistons. So this one was more of a boring pick, but it was just an easy pick for me. The Bulls are really looking good this year, except for that one game. Caruso's a great player. They're fitting really well. DeRozan dropped like 17, I believe, last night. And obviously, Zach LaVine's great. And I just think the Pistons are a bad team. So Bulls would obviously cover -8 over the Pistons. The second one I picked was interesting. I picked Grizzlies to cover a spread of +4 over the Clippers. So a lot of people are higher in the Clippers than I am. They have Eric Bledsoe, Paul George, and obviously like Terrence Mann and Reggie Jackson. But I think the Grizzlies this year, even though they traded away Jonas Valanciunas, who was like a huge part of their team last year, Ja Morant is just that dude. Like Ja Morant's ridiculous. He dropped 37 opening night. I think Ja can win a game for his team very easily. And I don't know, I just have a feeling that Ja's gonna pop off against the Clippers. And the last team I picked was Phoenix to cover a spread of +3 over the Blazers. This one is really interesting to me because I think that the Blazers should not have been favored in this matchup, but they were. So it was a no-brainer for me to pick the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix Suns, like we've talked about earlier, look like they're clicking on all cylinders. They don't really have a weak link. And I think that a lot of betting platforms are way too high on Damian Lillard, who is really just carrying the Blazers all the time. So I think Phoenix can pretty easily handle the +3 spread over the Blazers.
I definitely like your Phoenix pick. I also had the Phoenix pick for similar reasons. I scratched my head when I saw that they were not favored in that game. I looked it up. I was like, man, Chris Paul not playing? No, he's playing. Everyone's playing there, so I don't see picking Portland there. Phoenix looked really nice. Sure, in their first game, they did not nearly look as nice, but I definitely see them moving up in the standings and taking that win against Portland at a +3 spread, -110 odds. I'm also picking up Golden State on -3 against Sacramento. Golden State is looking better this year, and that's really good to see. They knocked off, sorry, the Lakers in their first game, and that was with Steph Curry dropping a triple double, but not the most efficient triple double for sure. He was not there, like that guy. But in the second game, he dropped 45 and 10, and he was 100% that guy. And I think he finds somewhere in between those two, definitely racking up some more assists. And knocking off Sacktown, who, yes, had a very nice win over Portland. And again, still confuses me how Portland is favored after that. But the third parlay I picked the over on Pelicans Timberwolves. These are two teams that like to score but do not like to play defense. This is a high over at 228.5, but I still see them covering this. The Pelicans, they scored a lot of points and they looked nice doing it last night, but they could not pick up the win against the Bulls, who dropped 128, and that would cover here, and I can see a similar outcome coming from this game. Obviously, if Ingram and Graham don't play as nicely, then it's definitely possible this doesn't hit. But I got to roll with my Pelicans and scoring some points. I don't know if they win this game, but that's my third take. That's all for today. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and stay tuned for the next installment of Dishing Heat with Wolfie and Big Shot Song.